Welcome to Well-Versed, where we bring biblical principles of governance to governmental leaders and you. This is the Well-Versed podcast.
We're going to go to our second guest, and it's Chaplain Steve Lee. This is a story that boggles my mind. Now, Chaplain, I'm going to have you tell just a list for me all the places where you've been a chaplain at as an emergency chaplain in moments of catastrophe all over our nation. And then we're going to come to a personal issue in your life that just boggles my mind. I don't understand it. We'll get to that in a second. But first of all, Chaplain, thank you, Steve Lee, for being with us. And just list for me, if you would, all the places you've been functioning as a chaplain.
Well, thank you, Jim, for having me on. I really appreciate it. I'm prior law enforcement. My Lutheran joke is I've had two careers, one in the law and one in the gospel, right? And so I used to be in law enforcement. And then when I went to seminary, became a chaplain, a law enforcement chaplain, and working especially with those folks. We call it workplace chaplaincy. You've referred to alternative kinds of ministries happening nowadays, and I've been involved deeply in that. Where I've been a chaplain for many years, really since 1989, a chaplain since I went into the ministry. And as a chaplain, I've been to all kinds of different disasters around the country, helping out as an ATF chaplain, as a chaplain of various police departments, or representing my organization, nonprofit faith ministry. And so I've been at Columbine High School, 9/11 Ground Zero, Hurricane Katrina, many different mass shootings, other hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, even the Haiti earthquake. I was with my denominational crisis team that went there, even a tsunami in American Samoa. And so I've been at many, many different things, and we've done a lot of different things in our ministry, including putting out a special Bible edition for law enforcement. We've gotten about 40,000 of those out over the years, including working with Billy Graham. We've worked in the past with Promise Keepers, Focus on the Family, Billy Graham, Franklin Graham, all kinds of folks out there in our work, getting the gospel out there to people who need it in that realm, especially of law enforcement, but also people impacted by crises and working with them and trying to help them.
Did I understand correctly? Holly's the one that's told me about you, Holly Sorrell, who helps operate our World Prayer Network, that at Columbine, you were there, and Cassie, do you want to say a word about this? Cassie?
Sure. Yeah. We lived about 45 minutes away from Columbine. We lived in the north end of Colorado Springs. My wife was working at Focus on the Family. We were out to lunch one day, and I heard on the radio that there was a shooting in progress at a high school. At the time, we had two of our own kids in high school in Colorado Springs, and I was very concerned. I was also serving as a Colorado Springs police chaplain. I called the watch commander at Colorado Springs, and he said, no, it's not here in town. It's up in a town called Littleton, a south Denver suburb, and at Columbine High School. And I was also serving as a Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms chaplain at the time. I called out immediately out to Washington, D.C., to the peer support unit out there. And they said, look, you're our closest chaplain. You're 45 minutes away. Get on up there and take lead. You'll be our lead chaplain up there. And that's exactly what I did. And I got there in time, actually, to help evacuate students and teachers on the Pierce Street side of Columbine High School. The tactical teams would bring them on out in groups, and I would take them and then escort them back to Leawood Elementary School to be reunited with their families. And we just kept shuttling these kids and teachers for an hour or two until we had them all out and trying to calm them down. So yeah, very involved there. And then later on, when the forensic teams had completed their work, it was the next day, late in the evening. I and two of my ATF chaplain partners, we went into the library where a lot of those kids had been shot and killed. And so I helped bag the bodies, and I had a prayer for the forensic teams there. So there's a lot of opportunity for some pretty serious ministry there to those officers, the forensic teams, the Bureau, FBI, ATF, local law enforcement, and then of course the families and school kids and teachers as well.
This is a pretty delicate question, but at one of these emergencies you were at, catastrophes, you helped shield, if I remember right, the body of one of the deceased from, was it from camera views or helicopter views or something of a nature?
That was at Columbine, and very, very tragic and sad. One of the victims, a young boy, had been shot and killed outside the building, and he was lying out on a sidewalk, dead. And all kinds of media were around, even including in helicopters. And one helicopter was up flying, and it had a side door open. And I could see the video camera, the TV camera poking out, taking a video. And I've got four kids of my own. I got seven grandkids now. And I was thinking about what a parent or family member would feel seeing their child laying out there. And so I did. I knelt down by the body and had a prayer for the family. And I wanted that to be the image, especially for the family, so that they would know that their loved one who they'd lost was not alone. And of course, that child is with the Lord, but still there needs to be respect shown for the body. So that was there have been many instances over the years, both in law enforcement and then as a chaplain, of those kind of times.
Well, that's a pretty tender story. That's remarkable. Did you ever, by chance, ever have any communication with that family, or did that not develop?
Well, this is something that's even today I kind of keep private. That Columbine was very personal. It was a situation where you knew each and every one of the victims and the who the families were. It was an intimate tragedy, and in a sense that made it even worse. When I was working 9/11, when I was at Ground Zero in New York, that's what we call it, Ground Zero, and working the 16 acres of the World Trade Center and all that wreckage, the loss of life was very, very much greater. But there was a sense of being pulled together as a national family in this tragedy. And it was a different kind of a thing. Columbine had a special kind of a pain to it because it was so close and personal.
Yeah. I'm gonna go to I gotta mention Chaplain. I don't you and I haven't met till just now, as we went live here, and I can't comprehend this what I'm reading about you and what you're going through. You have been charged with a crime, and you're gonna have to help me understand this. The crime you've been charged with is in Georgia. And if I am reading correctly, this boggles my mind, you're charged with a crime along with 18 other people, including the President of the United States or former President Trump, in the RICO charges and this Georgia case, the Fani Willis indictment in Georgia. I'm baffled by this. How in the world are you charged in a crime along with President Trump in the state of Georgia right now?
Well, and because I am charged with a felony, five counts of a felony, if found guilty, requiring 5 to 20 years mandatory prison sentence in a Georgia prison. So I have to be very, very careful about what I talk about, obviously. But what I can speak to and let you kind of extrapolate out what you think could be the case. In general terms, what I've done over the years, and I've got a track record of doing this, is going to scenes of major national crises, major national disasters, And doing my best to help people who are have been traumatized or in trouble, and trying to assist in those situations. I wear a collar. People see me, they think of a pastor, and maybe in a church setting, in a pulpit preaching or teaching. My pulpit has often been on the street in very, very critical situations. For instance, down in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, we had about 100 people trapped in our St. Paul Lutheran Church in downtown New Orleans. They had been trapped there for about 6 days. And the pastor there, Dave Goodine, he had set it up so they could shelter in place there, people in the neighborhood who could not evacuate. And these were poor people or disabled people, or they, for one reason or another, they couldn't get out from the hurricane. The hurricane hit on a Sunday night, Monday morning, and they were stuck there for 6 days, not because of the floodwaters. They actually didn't get flooded out. They had damage to the church, but they didn't have flooding. But what trapped them was roving street gangs. At one point, an 80 or 81-year-old black woman came to the door of the basement where they were sheltered, and she was carrying her ash the ashes of her son in an urn underneath her arm. She had been gang raped, and she was in very rough physical condition. And they were able to get out a few text messages. I got a call 6 days into it on a Saturday afternoon following about 4 o'clock in the afternoon from our people in our denomination saying, we can't get him out. We tried the White House, we tried the governor's office in Louisiana, we can't get him out. And having a background in law enforcement like I do, I sort of knew what to do. I drove across the Mississippi River on one of the bridges. I knew there'd be a checkpoint, and there was. There was a Louisiana National Guard sergeant there by the name of Sergeant Rick Moore. And I talked to him. He was with his Humvee there, and I said, "Sarge, we got a problem here. We've got 100 people trapped. They need to get out." And he said, "Can you write it up for me so I can have something in writing about this?" So on the hood of his Humvee, I wrote it out briefly what was going on there. And he worked very, very hard. And we had him out, those 100 people out in about 4 hours on buses with police and National Guard protection. So these are the kinds of things I've been involved with over the years. In trying to help people, I don't want to speak to the specifics of the case down there, but obviously there's been a lot of news out lately about issues that Fulton County has, and there's lots of allegations. And again, I don't want to speak to that, but I would invite people to take a look at my record, which is all documented, by the way, and take a look, compare and contrast with what's happening down there, and form your own judgments about the validity of this case. By the way, I've never met President Trump. I don't know him, and I don't work for him. I will say that.
Well, I'm kind of taken back by this. I haven't, I wasn't following the Fannie Willis when she was on the trial, and but then turned it on, and I had a little break and turned on TV and saw her response in court. I was quite taken back by the disrespect of the judge. I've been in court a few times as a witness, but I never seen anybody respond to a judge and to a court in that particular dishonoring way. So I was taken back by it. And of course, as a result, it's all over the news and on the media a lot. I'm just going to assume that somehow you tried to help some people in crisis, and you got swept in, and we're going to have to pray for you. Repeat again the charges. Is five felony charges?
It's 5 counts of a felony, including RICO under the Georgia RICO law, conspiring with others to illegally overturn the 2020 election, and a couple of counts of, as I understand it from my attorney, a couple of counts of knocking on doors and making some phone calls, and that's it.
If people want to help and assist in your attorney charges, your legal fees? Can they do that?
Absolutely. And Jim, I appreciate the opportunity. This, you know, it's been said that the process is the punishment, and something that's called lawfare, warfare by other means, including legal means. And this is what's going on here. I can say that I'm innocent of the charges. My record supports that. Both the law and the facts support this. But it doesn't stop lawfare from being practiced. And even if I win in this case, you know, it's tens of thousands of dollars. If it goes to trial, it'll be hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I'm a pastor. I'm not a millionaire. And so if people want to help with the legal defense fund that I've got, they can send it to givesendgo.com/ChaplainSteveLee. Again, givesendgo.com/ChaplainSteveLee. And really appreciate any kind of help that your folks can give.
Okay, folks, the full, I think it would be www.givesendgo/ChaplainSteveLee.
Yeah,
That's it.
givesendgo.com/ChaplainSteveLee. Yes.
LEE. Well,
Yes.
I'm sure there could be some people who are going to want to assist you in this process. I am.
And you know what? He owns the cattle on a thousand hills, doesn't he? He takes care of his priorities. God's work done in God's way will never lack what? God's supply. Hudson Taylor, right?
Yeah. Chaplain, I appreciate so much what you've given your life to. I, as a lifelong pastor, I've been to a number of very catastrophic situations myself, and I'm very thankful for people like you who are able to emotionally handle what you have to go through. To go to situation after situation and see the catastrophe and the human toll. So thank you for what you do. I had quite a few friends, buddies who were pastors, fly immediately to New York after 9/11 and gave quite a bit of time there. I'm sure you were coordinated with a lot of activities over
Yeah.
time. And you're also involved, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, with the Billy Graham Association.
Well, what we did is we did a we produced a special Bible for law enforcement. I wrote a 96-page introduction Bible study guide, a witnessing and evangelism mission tool, discipleship tool. And we've got about 40,000 of those out of the over the years. We're trying to start that up again. It looks like we're going to have another printing of that coming up. But they gave me an unsolicited grant for $21,000 to help with that at New York post 9/11. And also mentioned that if have you ever heard of the cross at Ground Zero? That's part of the 9/11
Oh,
museum.
yes, of
I
course.
chaplained the crew that got that out. Yeah, I think you may have a picture of that, or a couple of pictures of that. That
Tristan, if we do, if we
Holly's.
have some pictures, let's bring those up.
Oh, yeah.
That's where we put it up at first.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Are there other pictures, Chaplain,
There's
or?
another picture of where we were recovering it from Building 6 next to the North Tower. You should have that picture as well.
Kristen, you able to bring that up as well?
In 1 second.
Okay, he's looking for it. Chaplain, you have how many children and how many grandchildren again?
Four children and seven grandkids, and a wife of 46 and a half years.
Way to go.
Cousin who's still married to me after all this stuff we've been through, being a cop and midlife change of seminary, and then all the work that we've done since, including church work too.
How long were you a police officer?
It was probably about 13, 14 years altogether. It was kind of interrupted by going back to school, getting a degree, doing different things. But yeah, and I've worked, by the way, that picture you were showing earlier, that was me, not a Border Patrol officer. That was,
Oh.
yeah, pull it up. See if you got them. You should
Tristan,
have them.
can you get those pictures up for us?
That was the right picture.
Yeah, 1 second.
Okay, we're having a little technical difficulties here,
Your
folks. Stick
second's up.
with me. It's hard. There it is.
Well, I guess he can tell. All right. I think it must be coming up.
There it is. There it is.
Oh, so this is you.
That's me. Yeah. Yeah, that's me in 1986, 1987 time frame. I was a sergeant out in California in Mendocino County, and I was working out of the coast station there. And then I did a stint also with what was I went to work for the feds with an organization called NIS. Now it's called NCIS, and they've the ones with the TV show. And I was a special agent signed him off at field when it was still operating back in the Reagan years in the 80s. And I worked foreign counterintelligence, counterterrorism out of Moffitt in Silicon Valley there. Yeah, before I went to seminary. And then the Lord called me into seminary.
Oh, very good. Are we able to ask this question? I don't want to step over any lines of your trial. If it goes to trial, would begin when?
Well, they were wanting to start the trial in early August. Yeah, go figure with the election in November, right? But because of technical difficulties, you know, we're talking technical difficulties. Yeah, they've got some technical legal difficulties at this point. So I don't see this thing happening before the election, if it happens at all. The facts, the law, you know, if a person's exercising their constitutional rights and their duties according to their oath of office and their more important divine vows before the Lord under the First Amendment, freedom of religion, those rights only mean something if we actually exercise them and defend them. And so I feel like I'm called of the Lord to do that in this case on behalf of believers everywhere. And we're going to stand firm. I refuse to take a deal. I would rather go to prison for the rest of my life than agree to a lie. And that's what this is. And we got to speak truth apart from any circumstance. We trust the Lord. We don't trust our circumstances. And that's the case here.
That's quite a statement you just made, a very sobering statement, by the way. Would this fall into the category of a religious liberty case?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. If they win this case, your work is harmed. Tim's work is harmed. I mean, all pastors, all Christians everywhere, our rights are being eroded. I was told by one of my attorneys initially that there were something like 160 counts against all the defendants in this case, and really all of them related to First Amendment rights. Mm-hmm. They've criminalized the Bill of Rights is what they've done. And there's a reason for that. They want to transform this country into something that we will not recognize. You would recognize it, and I would recognize it if you've ever been to places like I have, like Nicaragua or Russia or Haiti or Africa. These are places I've been to, and I think you've been to those places as well. We don't want the United States of America to give up the rule of law and our constitutional rights. And we need to pray like Paul tells Timothy, 1 Timothy 2:1-2, pray for those in authority so that we can lead peaceful lives. Part of the general prayer of the church, we need to keep that going.
Okay, folks, you can help support the legal cause at www.givesendgo/Chaplain Steve Lee. Chaplain, do you have, separate from that, a website where they can learn more about you? Or if they just...
Well, if they go to, and here, you know, my adult supervision is Paul Hurst here, who's with me. And Paul is my communications guy. And if I may, can I defer to Paul on that question?
Oh, yes. You mean as your attorney?
No, he's not an attorney. He's my communications director here.
Sure, absolutely. Defer to him.
Yeah. You there, Paul?
Yeah, sure. Probably the best way to keep in touch about what's going on with this case would be to go to the givesendgo.com/Chaplain Steve Lee, because you can sign up for updates. So when we upload interviews and things, you can see them there and also on social media. But there's not really a website because this was totally by surprise. In fact, a judge in Illinois ruled there wasn't enough evidence to make him a witness in this case. And then they went ahead and indicted him. So.
Well, Chaplain, you seem to attract catastrophe wherever you go, even if you're on the World Prayer Network.
You know, there was a hostage situation and focus on the family on the National Day of Prayer. I think it was 1996. If you remember that? And I responded to that, and I ran down this over to where my wife was working. They were down sheltered down in the basement across from the administration building, across the parking lot, and I ran on in there. And I saw her down below, and she looked up at me and she gave me the wife eye roll. She said, "How do you, you're always in the middle of this stuff." And it's true. So you may not want to hang out with me too much here. But you know, we do see it's a spiritual battle. That was spiritual there, wasn't it?
Of course it was.
We've got the full armor of God.
Mm-hmm. Now, Chaplain, can we go to humor just for a moment? You have a sense of humor.
Absolutely. I've got the most warped sense of humor. So
I can't tell whether you go to catastrophes or catastrophes are just showing up wherever you are.
Well, my wife seems to think I am a walking catastrophe.
No. Yeah, okay. And we just pray the blessing and protection of the Lord supernaturally over you.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please read the show notes for additional details if you would like a copy of the book or resources mentioned. Remember that Well-Versed is a 501c3 tax-deductible nonprofit organization. We rely on your support and partnership.
Don't forget to hit subscribe to keep up to date with our latest episodes. Leave us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe too.
Thank you for listening to the Well-Versed podcast. For more information, please go to www.wellversedworld.org.